The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
One of the things we learned coming out of the back end of the pandemic is we did take on too many projects and initiatives, and we buried some of our best people in this constant state of change.
Welcome to the Measure Success Podcast, where we feature top leaders on how they measure success in their business and life. Now, let's learn from their experiences.
Rajay Cox here. I'm the host of the Measure Success Podcast, where I talk with top leaders about effective strategies that inspire success. This episode is brought to you by 40 Strategy. 40 Strategy is built to make strategy work for small to medium-sized companies and organizations by designing world-class strategic plans, but more importantly, help keep them accountable to actually get it done. To learn more, go to 40strategy.com. Also excited about a book that was just, well, it's almost been a year. Lost at CEO was released, Amazon number one bestseller, and we encourage you to go out, order it. For a few of our guests, if you want to really reach out to us, send me an email at carljcox@40strategy.com. We are sending signed copies of our books out to certain guests. And so if you are interested in that, send me an email. I'd be more than happy to front all the costs. And my only ask for you is you do an Amazon review. So that's our deal. And with that, so look forward to hearing that. And one of the people who has read the book and has applied 40 Strategy is our guest, Dan Grenfell. He is Huddle 3 PTS Advance. That's where he's currently at right now. He has the host of The Future of Teamwork. And he has a lot of really interesting things. It's been fun working with Dane and his team at Huddle 3 and PTS Advance. He has a passion for exploring the human experience and unlocking potential through teams in the world of work. Since entering the industry in 2001, he's enjoyed co-designing and innovating leadership team and organizational solutions for companies, navigational transformational changes in their operating model, asset portfolio, and external market conditions. He's currently the founder of Huddle 3 Group and the CEO of Leader 3. And he is a leader in human capital, specializing in these solutions as well, as we already mentioned. He does a ton of M&A work. Dane, welcome to the Measure Success Podcast.
Thanks, Carl. It's great to be on and having a conversation on the other side of the camera.
Right. It was really fun to be able to be a guest on your side. And as we were getting the start, I started cracking up laughing. It's like, well, this is weird. You know, it's weird to be on the other side. And have like this experience, like, oh my gosh, we're going. And because we've met actually so many times, like in person and through Zoom calls, right? And so it's been fun. It's been really neat to see. And I mean this sincerely, it's been humbling for me that you guys have actually applied our terminology. And you were one of the first companies like to take and go, wow, this is amazing. And you've used our language, which is the intent, right? Because we want to do things in a better way. So thank you. First of all, thank you for that, because that's been super fun. Let's talk about what you focus on today, and which is about unlocking teams and making really a difference out there. So let's start a little bit from the beginning and tell us a little bit more about Huddle 3.
Yeah, you bet. So I fell into the recruiting industry as a 19-year-old working in a bar in London. I'd grown up in Australia. I'm at university in London, not having fun. And this job of recruiting seemed like a good place to go. And as soon as I got there, I knew I'd found a calling, because I get to now talk to all of these really cool people who own businesses, run departments, and look at what they're trying to achieve and how we can bring talent to support that. So early on, I was exposed to lots of different teams and bringing talent into those teams and staying in touch with the talent and learning about their experience. And throughout my career, I was fortunate to work in some pretty large project environments, a lot of large oil and gas projects around the world. And coming into 2017-18, I sort of paid my dues, built a good enough network and level of experience. And I wanted to do something more entrepreneurial, get back to smaller to medium-sized business. So I joined the Stein family here in Irvine, California. And we took their staffing company, PTS Advance, and just started growing it. Some acquisitions, some organic growth, brought in some good talent. And we soon realized that we were going to grow we had opportunities to grow outside of the core staffing vertical. So we created Huddle 3 Group as a multifamily office of sorts, which allows us to have some shared services and to invest in other businesses. Right now, it's largely control positions in businesses operating in the human capital sphere. But we have, you know, looked at some angel investments too, just looking at anyone who's bringing ideas and energy to the community of how people go to work and how work shows up for people.
One of the things I wanted to mention there as you and it got to observe it right in person and talk with, you have family, a family business, really, which you've now got involved with, right? But they've been able to let go, right? They've been able to have confidence in you and the new leadership team to do this. And this is not an easy thing. This is like one of the biggest challenges that every entrepreneur who's listening and they're going, boy, am I willing to let go of my company to somebody who's not my family? You know, willing to enable them to do something, help me get to a greater position than I could perhaps do on my own. Or perhaps I'm at the kind of latter part of my years and I'm not willing and able to put in the 50, 60 hours a week, you know, to help get this stuff done. What has worked so well for you and the Stein family to actually get it to work?
It's a good question. And I think myself pretty lucky most days when I ponder the answer. Russell and David Stein came in and built the business with their dad. Back in 95, they started. So they came on and were building it with dad and mom and dad, actually. So they weren't sort of second generation owners. They're more like first generation entrepreneurs. And they built the business to a scale, which was phenomenal. And a really good level of profitability and then kind of hit a run rate that they were comfortable with. It allowed them to achieve what they wanted to achieve. They didn't go above and beyond, you know, taking on risk and debt to scale the business. So their version of success, their measure of success was well met. I met them when I actually tried to buy the business from them. They weren't for sale and we made good friends around the table. And when that transaction didn't transpire, the board of the company I was working with at the time didn't support the deal at the 11th hour, which was fine. They had good reason. I said, I want to do something new. I like working with you guys. And they said much the same thing. So 6 months later, we were sat around a lunch table and we actually started with a workshop, which said, what do you hope to achieve from this business and from your own role and your own time? So from that very early point, we'd built trust and we started working together towards more of a vision of what success would look like for each of us individually. And then collectively how we'd work together to get to that point of success. And surprisingly, David and Russell have been, you know, team members and actually working in the business. And now they've transitioned more to founding partners, you know, sitting on a board, supporting me to run the team and pick the right investment opportunities. And they really get their sleeves rolled up when we come into the deal and they get excited about the people and excited about what we're going to achieve. So we've turned it into a vehicle for collective impact, you know, impact for ourselves as shareholders, impact for ourselves as individuals who have interests, impact for the teams that we're investing in. And so I really think it comes back to just working out each other's stories and directions that we wanted to go. And we've kept that in check, you know, we're nearly 6 years in. And so we keep sitting down together and looking at the stories we're creating and how that's playing out for our families and our team members and our partners. But it really does come down to that human connection and impact.
So I have to ask, because there's always that conflict moment, right? When the founders, right? Or like yeah. There's a sense of concern, right? You had to run into multiple different downturns, right? In the economy in this period of time, right? And it gets very scary, right? For somebody who is the entrepreneur going, oh my gosh, am I going to lose what I've built and have, right? And so there's this tendency to go back into fight or flight mode, right? And they're like, I need to take over and get involved and I need to do the right things, all right? So when that happened, you know, maybe it didn't, but I'm assuming it did. When that happened, how did you help hear and listen, enable, but also at the same time clarify, you know, we have to do our new plan. We have to continue to move forward and move forward in the right direction. How did you help and continue, right, to help evolve that challenge, right, of working once again when you have board members, founding partners, where they to make sure that you're working in alignment?
I mean, that's a daily, weekly, monthly task, right? It's kind of like marriage. You know, it's not just all the work you did in the early part. It's continually applying yourself. And we do have moments of anxiety or nerves or someone seeing something that someone isn't. And we've actually been really candid with each other on calling out the concern. And we get together around a whiteboard. I would say one of the biggest tools that we've had over the last 5 or 6 years is when we run into a problem, let's look at all of the different pathways that we could assess to take us out of that problem, and not get too caught up on root cause analysis and the fear, like, hey, we've got great people, we've got cash in the bank, this isn't a good moment right now, but where can we pivot and where can we create some excitement and some clarity? And so I find, you know, with David Russell and I, we get in on a whiteboard, and if we're remote, let's say I'm back in Australia, we get on Mural and get into the visual whiteboarding, and we just start plotting paths, and we make it a team sport to just shoot down ideas and pick the most probable path and then act. You know, we don't get too caught up in the planning. And fortunately, you know, David and Russell have had some great ideas along the way when we've run into those moments, and they've had a lot of trust and faith in myself and the teams to just go and do something and put some energy, put some motion around the concern or the fear. And more often than not, like, don't get me wrong, we make some bad calls, but more often than not, we find a way through, and that only builds on the trust and the relationship.
One of the biggest challenges in working with teams, right, is people will be in a room, the decisions that's made, and then people will walk away and they didn't fully agree, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you help make sure that, yeah, you had the board talk, you had the part, how do you get that commitment that somebody's not going to change their mind, so to speak, meaning they weren't fully there, they said yes, they agreed, but they didn't really fully agree, and then they start back talking, and right, start at the home and the family meeting, and they start talking, dang guy, you know, he was doing this and that. How do you really help prevent that?
I think the "and" criteria is a really important one. You know, this is the decision we're making, and we realize it doesn't solve this, this, and this. So we're going to keep working towards it. But right now, this is the highest leverage, highest value task for us to be putting our time on for these reasons. So, you know, doing the whiteboarding, doing the ideation, picking the path, and making sure that you're keeping those other balls in the air of consideration for whatever other people's concerns have been.
Once again, what you're doing, I love what you're doing, because it is one of the hardest things I think that people have, is that transformation, once again, from one generation to another, or one generation to, once again, a new outsider, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? You know, coming in and trying to help out, because you've now hired a whole other team that's been a part of the operating companies like PTS in Advance and some of the other acquisitions yep. that you've done, yep. right? Are they, when appropriate, are they a part of the decision-making of those? Like,
yeah.
when do you get them yeah. involved in key hires? Is it all the key hires, or is it to a certain level? When you get them involved?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we've set Huddle 3 group up as the multifamily office with the shared service function. So finance and IT, and then the, like, the transaction support for when we are investing or buying. That's really the core of what's at Huddle 3 group. Traditionally, we had people and culture in that group as well. So I was managing those functions and I would pick those people and grow those people. But we've now moved people and culture into the leader business that we've just sort of grown out of what was a search practice, and now we've acquired Inspira. So they do a lot of HR advisory, OEOD type work. Each of those operating companies actually has its own rhythm and cadence and strategy. As much as it leans into Huddle 3 Group for the core functional support, we're trying to encourage them to, you know, as leaders and as team members, take the business where they want to go. So there is actually an appropriate relationship there between the operating company and Huddle 3 Group. And it's fascinating, because it just, each year it just evolves, matures, twists a little bit, but we're spending a lot of time together and we're finding ways to grow. And that was why we've enjoyed bringing you and the team in at the PTS Advance organization, because that business has grown almost 4x in the last 5 years, and they're really pushing up on the need to do things fundamentally differently. So setting a 10-year vision and giving that team the autonomy to build a strategy and an execution plan that they can work through is kind of that next stage of matriculation for all of us.
I just say this for those who are listening. It's been so funny. I think the first group that has started before we were done. You are such a group of achievers. You were like, no, Carl, we understand there's a process here, but we're going to like start working forward. But you still use the language, but you really spent a lot of time, I'd even say more than a lot of our other clients we work with, on that 10-year vision, that 3-year path behind where we're getting. But I think it was so important, because there were so many, this is what we should do and this is what we shouldn't do, right? That's such an important part of strategy of, like, because the hardest part is the entrepreneurs who are running the companies. I think every entrepreneur has this problem, or every CEO. It's like, oh, there's the candy, right? You know, down the street, or, you know, there's this opportunity you could go to. How do you see that, envision this helping you to say no, right? Be willing to say no when you used to say yes in the past.
I mean, it's essential. I think one of the things we learned coming out of the back end of the pandemic is we did take on too many projects and initiatives, and we buried some of our best people in this constant state of change. So I think having the strategy and having the methods to execute the strategy and check back in at the end of each sprint and do your stop, start, goes, I think it creates a safe space, and it creates a language framework where you're not just being led by the entrepreneur or the CEO, you're actually making strategy a team effort. And I think that's been one of my fortunate sort of experiences to stumble across that with the team right now, rather than when we've burnt some key people out and we've lost talent from the organization. We're kind of coming into it just at the right time.
Yeah, you've done a really good job of understanding the importance of having, like, when possible, right, to try to have one person associated with one key sprint or goal, right, working on any particular period, as opposed to the traditional, you could do 7 of these things and do your normal job right at the same time. And that's the hard part, right, of moving through that. So let's talk a little bit more. Once again, I'm curious too of all the different pieces you're going. What is some core thing right now that you want to share about that's kind of been top of mind for you that has get you excited to go to work each day?
I mean, we set out our purpose for the companies as advancing people through business and business through people. And that was the reason we started the Future of Teamwork podcast too. The world of work's just changing so phenomenally. And within that lies a lot of opportunity and also a lot of threat and distraction. So I think where we're really trying to focus, and it's ambitious, it's way out there, is where do we drive impact at a people and business level, but also at an individual and team level. So we've kind of got this quadrant, if you will. And we want to try and do all 4 things at once. Like, can you have high productivity and growing shareholder value in these businesses, and participation of key team members in that growing shareholder value? Can you have all of that and be growing people as individuals, be growing the fabric of the communities that you serve? And so that's what we're really exploring. And we haven't found by any means any hack or any strong sense of an answer, but we're finding lots of really cool questions to explore as teams internally and externally with customers, partners, future M&A targets. So that really seems to be a theme that excites me, you know, getting out of bed in the morning. And I think it excites the team too, because they've all got day jobs, but they love having a day job and knowing that we're constantly chipping away at the fringes to find something that might be a game changer for them, for their customer, for their family.
Yeah, I think what I love what you're trying to do there is what's important is being intentional, right? It's easy to talk about, hey, we're going to make a difference in the community, but it's far different to actually set a strategic initiative that we're going to do something in the community, right? And however that is, whether it's time, whether it's money, whether it's being involved, right? Just being, and being aware or finding ways to help get through it. But talk is really cheap most of the time, right?
Yep.
Until you do, right? Until you actually be present and you care about it. Because I think the hard part too is, like, when you get down to these things, like, you want to be so careful it's not a check the box activity. Like, I think sometimes, like, your company go, hey, we want everybody in the company to, like, spend 40 hours volunteering, like, 3 years, as an example, right?
Yeah.
But if that person doesn't have the heart to give 40 hours and they're coming in with, like, a pessimistic attitude and the whole thing, is that bring value? Now, that's one comment. Now, sometimes you have to kind of force some things to create the uncomfortableness so they get comfortable. For example, right? If any of you who's been listening here has done it beforehand, has tried to serve food, let's say at a homeless shelter, if you are in that community, it is very uncomfortable, especially the first time doing something like this, right? Because you're getting involved, you're using, but if for many, once you get over yourself and once you get in the experience and you start seeing that, hey, there's humans on this other side behind this. I'm just giving an example, right? I'm not saying this is something you're doing, but my point is taken, like, you have to be willing to sometimes force some level of uncomfortableness, but at the same time, hope that the heart is still there. It's not a check the box activity. I'm kind of curious from your perspective, what have you found has, because we talked about this before we started, you and I are kind of more doers by trade, and we try to get the being side to matter, right? And so what have you done? What have you found in some ways where it's like it's been meaningful to you or to the people that you're working with? It hasn't been just a check the box activity.
You used an interesting word a few times there around uncomfortable or discomfort. I think making it okay for people to embrace discomfort is important in the business, whether that is giving or volunteering or stepping into a stretch project, because I actually think it's comfort which is the enemy of growth for a lot of individuals. It's also true for companies, but for individuals, the comfort is often the thing that holds us back from really bringing out the true essence of self. So we've been forcing probably a lot of change on some people, whether it was, you know, going and getting involved in a volunteering exercise, whether it's, hey, let's go and think about entrepreneurship. You know, everyone seems to be very afraid of entrepreneurship. Hey, I'm walking away from the security of a good job. But if you're not going to personally go and participate in entrepreneurship, we run a program called Boundary Riders, where we say, let's go and find an entrepreneur in the community and let's leverage our network, experience, tools, balance sheet to help them. So let's at least kind of live vicariously through them. So we're trying lots of little things that just bring people into that sense of discomfort. And we're trying to take a little bit of time to then debrief and say, well, what was that experience? What was meaningful for you? What was uncomfortable for you? What would you do differently? So that's not a lot of our day, but they're key themes that we're running through the business and with our partners in the community. So I think that's been a big part of that kind of growth journey.
Appreciate you touching on that point of comfort. And I think it's something we all struggle with, right? Like I try to have one day a week where I relax and do nothing, you know, or be comfortable or just watch a few football games on TV or something like that. And I really try not to work that day. And it's hard. It's hard for me, right? To like stop and relax. And I find though it's important, but on the flip side, we don't learn to walk without stumbling a lot, right? Like literally. Nope. I've been listening to Hidden Potential by Adam Grant, and he talks about how the importance of getting this level of discomfort, but also finding a way to create discomfort to be fun, which is a weird concept, right? How do you find ways to change your patterns where it's not just grinding at the same shot every single time? You feel like in basketball or in some sport where you're like, oh, I'm just practicing three pointers, but how do you find a way to make it entertaining in our game? And this isn't game, like the term again, Adam Grant says, this isn't gamification to fool you. This is actually where it's fun. It truly is. And it's funny. I've struggled with that concept, Dan, historically through when I've coached 25 seasons of sport, and I know you've coached as well. Right. And so I struggle when, oh, let's make it fun. I'm like, is that really the goal? But what I found is when people focus on fundamentals, like the basic blocking and tackling, so to speak, we tend to be really successful. But what's interesting is when you keep on only focusing on the fundamentals and you don't change the way how you practice it, it can get boring, right? Mm-hmm. It can get to something where all of a sudden you don't give it your all each time. And I think that is the fascinating part of everything we do, right? And you've mentioned it, of like, how do we enable ourselves to be uncomfortable, but how do we be creative to actually be a little bit of fun too at the same time, right? Where it's not all just begrudgingly doing it because I got to grind, right? And I got to get this done. And I thought it was really interesting. And by the way, I didn't read Steph Curry was taught in this manner, by the way.
I didn't know this until
listening to this book. Yeah, he was taught how to have. And it's funny, I now like have a little bit more what I'd call understanding of how he looks like he's having fun. He looks cocky out there often, right? But you can almost sense like he's playing a game within the game, like because he's like practices so many times and these weird things, and it's like, and then when it actually happens in a real life environment, that's got to be fun, right? It's got to be fun to do things. And once again, if you know, most people know Steph Curry, but he was only recruited by one Division I school, Davidson, only one, and he was the son of an NBA player, right?
Yeah.
And literally, apparently, according to the coach, the reason why he brought him on, it had nothing to do with his skill. He's like, he had no skill, despite not being very good, he was constantly encouraging, he was working hard. And so he's like, okay, I got a lump of clay, I could work with something here, right?
Yeah.
You know, and do something to have positive to this. But I just appreciate, once again, what you were saying of finding ways to be difficult. All right, so we're going to get into some of the core questions I love to ask.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to do this quick, Dan, okay? So and your business, how do you measure success?
I mean, one of the big areas for us is looking at the gross margin dollars for every SG&A dollar that we spend. We're professional services businesses in two of our three main groups. So it's really looking about productivity of the individual and the team through those metrics.
And I like it how you have a ratio. By the way, that was a really, for those who are listening, often just a true measurement, like EBITDA as an example, isn't necessarily the best measurement, right? But when you have it as a against something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like EBITDA per employee, right? Or revenue per employee, or like you said, gross margin per employee, you know, SG&A, it changes the ball game. It forces you to look at a couple different metrics that are working together. And then you can actually find ways to fix it, right? Which is really brilliant. Okay, so we're gonna that was quick. We're gonna make that a quick side because I know you have so many different businesses we could like talk for days about. Because I know you have them. You have tons of metrics. Let's go to the personal side. You have a really cool personal life, and you do something really cool in the mornings. I think people who would be hoping to do. You do, but what type of habits do you try to consistently do so you could bring your best to your work and to your family?
Yeah. So I try and wake up every morning and hit the sauna. It's a good place to kind of get rid of some tension and kind of refresh the thinking for the day, do a bit of reflection. And then I'll often surf, you know, before the sun's up, which is also just a good place to kind of be zen and have some me time. So that's definitely the way I'll start every day. Finishing the day is my problem. I've tried all sorts of different things, getting on the Peloton, going for a walk with the dogs, but I struggle to consistently stop the day. And so that's like a fads and fashions thing for me. Okay, no phone after 7 o'clock, or, you know, whatever it is that I try and do to bookend the day and make time for myself and the family. That's probably the tougher part.
Yeah, it's funny. You nailed it for me too. I think the end of day is super difficult, right? You know, to be able to get to.
Yeah.
One of the things I heard recently, actually by Ed Milet, he did something, he does something brilliant. He divides his day into 3 days, right? So the concept is, hey, I'm going to not only have a good morning and a good afternoon, but a good evening. And so he looks at them as three different days and as opposed to just one day. Right.
Yeah.
And so you kind of try to win each segment of the day. Right. You know, because I think what happens to a lot of us is for those who have families or not, but you get done from work and there's this tendency to just, we're weak, right? We're weak at the end of the day. Yeah. And we're tired and or we might even have family activities that we get involved with. And so then you get to 8, 9 o'clock, you get home and it's like, do you just chill and relax or do you plan for the next day or do you write journal or do you, you know, I mean, what else can you do? I think it's super hard to do that or not do that. So let me just ask the silly question for those who are not surfers, because I think surfing is one of the hardest things in the world to do. And the endurance that you have to learn from surfing, right? To have the patience to like pick up a wave. And you're doing, it's not exactly warm water, right?
Most not of as the cold year, right? As so up your way, but yeah, it's wetsuit most days.
So, and I was impressed. Like we had several things. You're like, what did you do this morning? Oh yeah, we went surfing. You gotta be kidding me. You know, like it's already up in the morning. What do you learn from getting out there and surfing? You know, what does it do for you?
It's a few things. One, routine's great. You don't think about it. You don't wake up and negotiate with yourself. You just get out there. And once I'm on the beach, I'm more inclined to do my full stretching regime and then get out in the water and work hard, you know, because surfing in, whether it's Queensland, my hometown, or Southern California, you've got to kind of hustle to catch waves amongst all the other people, the crowded spots. So I like kind of working hard and then coming back feeling like not only did I wake up, stretch and work hard, but I really gave myself something that I enjoy to start the day. That really gives me a lift and it makes me ready and thankful and grateful to go and serve others. So I think that's a big part of why surfing is such an important part of my life. And interestingly, why I so rarely surf in the afternoons and evenings. I like to start my day with it. Later in the day, it's you know, I've already left. The train's left the station. I'm not always in the right mindset or place.
And how do you measure success in your personal life?
I was having that conversation with my wife at the weekend. I think a lot of people like you as well. I do struggle with, you know, the always on and, you know, sometimes not being fully present with my family. I've coached a lot of seasons. In fact, this is the first season in about 7 years that I'm not coaching. So I'm really trying to force myself in some different practices. I think what my wife and I would, Claire, it is, Claire and I were talking about how are we making memories? You know, how will our kids look back on this time with us or our parents look back on the trip that they took with us. And so we're really indexing super high on memories and kind of leaning a little bit into chaos. Like, don't plan things out too much. Don't be too precise. Let's just go and wing it. Because if we plan to go and spend the whole day at the beach with people and have a barbecue, it becomes work. Whereas if we just say, hey, let's get in the car with the dogs and go down to the beach today and see where it takes us, it's kind of fun being on the journey with the family. So that's kind of quite a current recent phenomenon that we're focusing on.
I think that's wonderful. We have my family has been going to Seaside, Oregon we usually do the 4th of July weekend. And it's just become this tradition. And what we didn't realize until as the kids have gotten older, meaning the third generation now, right, of how much it's meant to them in terms of memories, right? And yep. Like they almost, like, no matter where they're out, they're like, they'll try to make everything they do to make that event, because as you older you get, right, you have more conflicts and more challenges, right? But they're like, man, we can go to that event because there's so many memories. And I think that's what's interesting, is this combination of having some level of consistency with some things. But I also like what you said, is finding ways to, I think it does come down to memories. We talked about this once again pre-show. You know, at the end of the day, people care about the impact and those memories that you had with people. They're not going to remember the rote, basic, the surfing everyday stuff, right? You know, that's not going to be remembered. But what is going to be remembered is how you did these special things, or you said something at the right time, or just that you were there and present, right? And that's what really matters. So I think that's super awesome. Dane, how can people connect? You always have your podcast, you have your company. What are some best ways to connect and people to learn more about you?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for asking. So LinkedIn's where I spend a lot of my time, and the team do as well. So the Future of Teamwork podcast is there. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, the other channels for podcasts too. A Huddle 3 Group is the parent company, the multifamily office. So my email is dane@huddle3, which is huddl3.group. And otherwise, reach out to Carl and talk about how good the captain strategy is, and we'll no doubt find plenty of good things to be talking about.
Very kind of you. And I did forget to ask Dane, what is a book you'd recommend for our audience? That's not mine, and that's not yours. New book.
Oh, so many good books lately. Probably one of my favorite books I've been recommending for the last year, just staying with the theme of memories, is a book called Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. And it's phenomenal. It's a life changer. It's changed my approach to a lot of things and to some of my friends. But it's all about, what can you be doing in the moment that is your highest point of leverage for yourself and those people around you? You know, don't be wasting time working on an insurance policy or something for the future when you're at your healthiest and best moment with those that you love right now.
Wise. I look forward to that. I have not heard about the book, so thank you so much for sharing that. And we'll make sure that our audience gets that as well. So Dane, this has been awesome. I'm so glad we had a chance to reciprocate this. And it was such a joy to be on your podcast. And thank you so much for being on it. And as you said, we always like to say, please go out, listen to the Future of Teamwork podcast. Dane's got a great show on there. It's really making a wonderful difference. And to everyone else who's listening, just wishing you the very best at measuring your success, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Measure Success podcast. We'll see you again next time to learn from the best. Remember to subscribe now to get future episodes.